The proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and the sergeant-at-arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Paul Rogers from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and stay standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
A word from Psalm 32, describing good governance. It will be like a hiding place from the wind, a shelter from the tempest, like streams of water in a dry place, like the shade of a great rock in a weary land. Let us pray. God of grace and mercy, we ask for your presence and blessing. Bless our state in such a way that the protective words of the psalm could serve as a description of the legislation of this session and of our government and life in Minnesota. But we know that the challenges faced by political leadership these days are great, complex issues, contradictory expectations from demanding constituents, deeply divided views on what programs and policies, funding and taxation might be appropriate. So we ask for your blessing, O God, on our state and especially on all the women and men of this assembly, the senators, their staff members, all officials and employees of the Senate. During the coming weeks, let these people not be buffeted by fierce winds, nor be tempest-tossed. May they have no need to yearn for refreshing waters or dream of rest in a cool shade. Rather, sustain them with wisdom and courage, vision and energy. Yes, O God, bless these men and women dedicated to serve our whole state. Bless them all. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Thank you. Good to see you. Blessings. Yeah, that was good.
Secretary, we'll take the roll.
Anderson, Buck, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J., Peterson B., Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
Quorum is present. First order of business is messages from the House.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file herewith returned. Senate file number 1563, a bill for an act relating to public safety, requiring the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to do background checks at the request of Indian tribes. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And, Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file number 1725. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
In the next order of business is first reading of the House bills. There's one on today's agenda. Without objection, it will be referred as indicated. Next order of business is reports of committees. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is second reading of Senate bills.
Mr. President, are you taking motions now?
Not yet. Next order of business is the second reading of Senate bills. They're on today's agenda without objection. Second reading. Next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. First reading, and it will be referred to the committee as indicated. This is motion and resolutions. There are two on today's agenda. We will adopt them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Motion prevails. Now we're under motion, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate file number 269 on general orders be stricken and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay. You've talked to...
Talk to myself, yes.
You talk to yourself. You do that quite often?
I do.
we can try
Mr.
to get
President,
you
this was these three motions that I'll be making were taken, are bills that were taken up in the Finance Committee, and just a mistake was made, and they were referred to the floor rather than to the appropriate committee where they need to be heard again.
On the motion, the Rest motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate file number 983 on general orders be stricken and referred to the Committee on Taxes with the same explanation.
Okay. On the Rest motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate file number 1110 on general orders be stricken and referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. Same explanation.
On the motion, on the Rest motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. There's one introduction of a resolution without objection. It'll be sent to the Rules Committee. Are we breaking up? Senator Bach.
Mr. President, we're about to recess, and the Rules Committee will meet immediately upon recess in room 15. We've got a very short agenda. And then I would say about 12:40, the DFL majority will caucus in room 107 for, let's plan on trying to be back on the floor by around 10 after 1 or so.
On the motion to recess, all those in favor? Excuse me, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just the Republican caucus will meet in room 112 after rules. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Senate's in recess.
I move further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Sergeant will bring in the absent members. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we revert to reports of committees. The Secretary will read the reports.
Senator Bach from the Committee on Rules and Administration, to which was referred under Joint Rule 2.03, together with the committee report thereon, Senate File Number 2056, a bill for an act relating to workers' compensation, adopting recommendations of the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council regarding inpatient hospital payments.
Senator Bach.
Reports the same back with the recommendation that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File Number 2056, and that the report from the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development shown in the Journal for April 16, 2015 be adopted. That committee recommendation being the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. And Senator Bach from the Committee on Rules and Administration, to which was referred under Joint Rule 2.03, together with the committee report thereon, Senate File Number 1398, a bill for an act relating to retirement, statewide and major local public retirement plans, reports the same back with the recommendation that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File Number 1398, and that the report from the Committee on State and Local Government, shown in the Journal for April 16, 2015, be adopted. That committee recommendation being the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee reports read by the Secretary be adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. I'm going special orders. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. And members, the list is on your desk.
First bill under consideration is number 165 on general orders, House File 2225, Senator Dahl.
Madam President, thank you. Members, we do have House File 2225 in front of us, and as you all know, if you haven't been paying attention, we have a real crisis on our hands in our ag industry, especially our turkey growers, and I hope not in Minnesota, our chickens, but this morning's news indicates that over 5 million chickens were put down in northern Iowa, and the governor of Wisconsin has declared an emergency as it relates to this virus that's just taken over at least, I believe, 12 states at this point. Minnesota is the nation's largest turkey producer, and 28 of our turkey farms have been devastated by the H5N2 avian flu virus. Yesterday, if I would have presented this bill, that would have been 26, but there's two more farms in Minnesota, turkey farms, that have been infected. This crisis is not isolated to our area. It's now in 14 counties, has the potential to cripple the entire turkey industry. In light of this crisis, Governor Mark Dayton issued Emergency Executive Order 15-06 to respond to the crisis, and House File 2225 provides some funding to the Department of Agriculture and the Board of Animal Health. Specifically, Section 2 appropriates $514,000 in fiscal year 2016 from the general fund to the Commissioner Ag for costs of the avian influenza emergency response activities that are not covered by federal funding, and then another $379,000 appropriated in fiscal year 2016 from the general fund of the Board of Animal Health for the cost of avian influenza emergency response activities. Last week, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and the Board of Animal Health submitted cooperative agreements to the USDA. On Friday, the governor spoke with Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, to thank him for the tremendous support of the USDA and to request that the cooperative agreements be approved as soon as possible. The secretary concurred but informed the governor that it still may take a couple of weeks to finalize approval of the cooperative agreements. Since these funds were not anticipated in the budgets for Department of Agriculture or the Board of Animal Health, they do need to be appropriated by the legislature once those cooperative agreements are approved by the USDA. So there is some urgency. We request that the legislature today approve this particular bill so that once those USDA approves those agreements, both the Department of Ag and BAH can begin spending the federal funds. Section 3 of the bill is language that MMB, Minnesota Management and Budget Office, did request. Typically, when we access federal funds, it has to go to a legislative advisory commission. That can take 10 days, and then some reporting is done once we access the funds. But this actually language allows us to access the funds, but still allows the reporting in an expedited fashion. There is Section 1 of the bill is another technical change, changing a date of reporting for the general reserve. So I think the House did take this up last week and unanimously passed this particular bill. There's some urgency. We hope that the legislature, the Senate here today, also acts quickly on this particular bill. I'll stand for questions.
Is there any discussion? Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Thank you. And Senator Dahl, as a senator from the district that had, unfortunately, the first avian flu diagnosis in a turkey flock in Pope County, I appreciate you seeing the urgency of this. This has grown massively every week since March 4th when that first flock was diagnosed. And so I hope we can get this emergency bill moving along very fast. You rightfully quoted Secretary Bilsek and his request to try to keep this moving as fast as we can. And so, members, we've had this bill come upon us in the last week, and we've got some additional funding to help curb this avian flu that is a problem for the turkey farmers in my district. Stearns County is also now has flocks diagnosed. There's 14 counties. But, members, I want to move the A50 amendment so we can keep this bill moving. So, Madam President, I would move the A50 amendment.
Members, I want to remind you that we're working off the unofficial engrossment, and that's on your computers. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Westrom moves to amend House File Number 2225, the unofficial engrossment as follows. Page 1, delete Section 1, and this is the A50 amendment.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, members, I would ask you to support the A50 amendment. This deletes language that was slipped onto this bill in the last minute or two of Finance Committee. I am still puzzling over what the urgency of changing the reporting date for a state agency from January to August 31st, how that rivals with the emergency we've got going on with the turkeys industry in our state. This came up very last minute in Finance Committee. Nobody can give me a great explanation, and it certainly doesn't rival the emergency that our Secretary of Agriculture, Bilsek, was talking about, or Senator Dahl, what you've just communicated to us as well. You know the sense of urgency, and so, members, this would clean up this bill, leave this reporting language for another bill. We've got multiple bills coming through this body in the next month. Why it would be slipped onto this bill and try to slow it or drag it down, I have no idea. The House of Representatives acted first on this responsibly. They have said they're not interested in adding other outside policies to this bill. And so, members, it's important, and I urge your support so we get this done. Slide this through efficiently in our process, but keep it narrow to the emergency at hand for our turkey farmers across the state of Minnesota. And so, members, I urge your support of this amendment so we don't slow this down.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I impose a call to the Senate for the remainder of the proceedings under House File 2225.
Senate is under call. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move further proceedings and the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Sergeant will bring in the absent members. Discussion on the A50 amendment. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam President. And I, too, rise in support of Tory's Senator Westrom's amendment. You know, I have three counties that have had barns that have broke out with the avian flu. It's a pretty serious issue. And when you see this happen in your neighborhood, you know how much of a disaster it really is. And I am grateful we're bringing this bill forward today and hopefully we get it passed. But I think it's really unfortunate. When we typically deal with an emergency bills in this body, we keep those bills clean. And here we are trying to add something now that has absolutely nothing to do with the avian flu to try to move it through kind of in a quick pace that hasn't been vetted, hasn't had time to really be discussed. But we think here we can get this done because we've got a bill that people are going to need to vote for, because they need to make sure we get this disaster, some funds for this disaster. And I think it's really unfortunate in a body like this, when we have people that need our help and are in need and we have an emergency bill, and so then we try to slide stuff on it that has nothing to do with it. So I would ask people to support this amendment. Let's show our agricultural producers, let's show the industry, and let's show the people of Minnesota that we can do business here at the Senate, and we can do it in an up forthright matter and not have to try to slide stuff in on bills like this that we haven't had a chance to vet and talk about.
Senator Newman.
Madam President, I rise in support of the Western Amendment. In my district, I have a number of turkey farms, and would indicate to the members that this really is an important issue from an emergency standpoint for the turkey farmers in Western and Northern Minnesota. I saw this amendment that Senator Cohen put on in the Finance Committee for the first time, and I've got to say I candidly don't know what it has to do with the emergency steps that we are trying to do to protect the turkey farmers in the state of Minnesota. As recently as 2 hours ago, I was on the phone with one of the turkey producers in my district, and I will tell you, colleagues, that they are very, very appreciative of what we are trying to do to help them, because this is a massive problem for one of the biggest industries in the agricultural area in the state of Minnesota. In point of fact, just to the west of my district lies Senator Conan's district. And he not only has turkey farms in his district, but in Wilmer he has a very, very significant processing plant that is also in jeopardy. The purpose of rising and asking that we adopt the Western Amendment is to just get this thing moving forward faster. And the sooner that we can get the help out there for these farmers and these processing companies, the better off we're going to be. And I am certain that if there is legitimacy in the amendment that was added in the Finance Committee, we can find another vehicle to amend it onto and move it forward in due course. But it doesn't have anything to do with the emergency that is now faced in our Senate districts in Western and Northern Minnesota. Madam President.
Senator Thompson.
Madam President, I simply rise to request a roll call on the bill. On the amendment.
Roll call requested, roll call granted on the amendment.
Yes, Madam President, I misspoke on the amendment.
On the amendment. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President and members. And I'm rising to try to explain the purpose of this date change. It's a relatively small change in that we're just moving the date from January into August. And the reason for that is so that when we are making the calculations for determining the amount that would flow into the reserves, that we have a date after the legislative session. So any legislative activities that occur would be taken into account as the MMB does their calculations. It just seems like a relatively reasonable thing to accomplish here, and it helps the department as they're doing their forecasting and their calculations as they go through the year now, so that they know that this will be the date that they're to be working with in the future. And it just helps in the administration of the effort that we have been doing to build our state's reserves. And so I would ask you to not support the Western Amendment. And then let's pass House File 2225 so that we can help the turkey growers of the state.
Senator Rood.
Madam President and members, I rise in support of the Westrom Amendment. Understand this. If we support this amendment and we pass this bill out, the governor can sign it tonight. Tonight, we can have emergency funding and emergency relief for our farmers and our ag community. Tonight, we can do that. But if we pass this bill with this amendment on it, without supporting the Westrom Amendment, we have to then have a conference committee. The conference committee would appoint, the conference committee would meet, and so our farmers it may be the end of the week, it may be next week, that they are allowed relief. And we have declared an emergency now. So I ask you to support Senator Westrom's amendment so that they can get their relief, and the governor can sign this bill tonight.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, I rise in support of the Westrom Amendment. Just a couple of points I want to make is I believe that in committee when Senator Cohen offered the amendment, he mentioned that he didn't want to delay the bill and was not hesitant in the sense, but he did indicate that if this was going to delay the bill, it wasn't something that we needed to do. And if it's as benign as the supporters of it are making it, then it could go on another bill easily. There are plenty of bills. This really isn't even germane to this bill. Granted, there's no germaneness test in committee, but it really has nothing to do with the flu that we're talking about. I also just wanted to point out, I handed out a statement from Speaker Dowd that he released yesterday, and the last sentence, I think, does tell you that this will be delayed. It says, the House will not accept any provisions that do not relate to the emergency at hand. Minnesotans are struggling, and our urgent help is needed. And so I think that we need to support the Westrom Amendment, get this on here, and get this bill moved out. And like Senator Rood mentioned, this could be signed tonight, and we would have this taken care of.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to support Senator Westrom's amendment. I have the privilege of having family in several of these counties, and to drive from my parents' house to my brother's house, we have to drive past numerous turkey barns, now at risk of losing a significant number of assets. Additionally, I have a constituent who's a chicken picker, who's been texting me every day asking what we're going to do about this. This is our opportunity. Let's just do the Westrom Amendment, pass the bill, the House moves it, the governor signs it, and we show the people of Minnesota that when things are simple and things are right, we will do the right thing. This is an easy vote, members. Yes on the Westrom Amendment.
Is there any more discussion on the A50 Amendment? Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. I concur with Senator Scoy that this is not a major deal in and of itself. But that's making the argument for supporting Senator Westrom's amendment. It's not a major deal. It could get plugged into any other bill without controversy if it made sense in context of that bill. But in this bill, in an emergency funding bill, for a problem that has become catastrophic, that is over a dozen counties, where we're destroying who knows how many millions of birds, you're going to tie this to this bill and bog it down. We can support the Westrom Amendment. We can take this irrelevant language out of this bill, this benign language, but it's irrelevant to this bill. And this bill will get to the governor today. Or we can defeat the Westrom Amendment, leave the language in, and it's not going to be accepted by the House, and it's going to go to a conference committee. And who knows how long? Days? Weeks? A month? Does it even get passed out of conference committee? We have no idea. Why take the risk over something so benign? It makes no sense. Just support the Westrom Amendment, get a clean bill, get this emergency funding done, get it to the governor. He could sign it tonight. We could have that money flowing by tomorrow afternoon. Just support the amendment. It's the common sense thing to do. It, quite frankly, I think it's the moral thing to do.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam President, members, I just want to make you aware this bill is significantly different than what came over from the House. I think the House acted very hastily, and that's what happens when you take bills up that are upon introduction, you don't take them through the committee process. They took a bill hastily up, suspended the Constitution and the rules, and they sent us the bill in a rush on a unanimous vote. Members, there was no provision in the House bill that came over here that appropriated the federal money. That's Section 3 of this bill. I wasn't even in this bill when it came over from the House because they got so hasty that they forgot that. It also the House bill that came over appropriated money in fiscal year 15. This bill, as it now sits in front of us, appropriates the money in fiscal year 16 but makes it currently available. This bill is a lot different than the House bill, and to say that it will go to conference over the small provision on changing a date on the calculation of the budget reserve is just inaccurate. It may go to conference all right, but it's going to go to conference because the House sent us a bill that was not ready to go to the governor. This bill now is in much better condition than it was in when the House sent it over.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President, and members, and Senator Bach. I just want to assure you that I think, Senator Bach, you're right. The bill did get changed in the Senate. I think that's a good argument for why we have two bodies and an opportunity for both bodies to look at bills. In conversations that I've had with the other body and the Speaker, he and their body are certainly willing to accept the language that the Senate has put in the bill that pertains to addressing the emergency, the disaster relief that we're talking about. What they are unwilling to do, and they say it very explicitly in the memo that Senator Fischbach handed out, is they don't want any extraneous language in this bill. They want a clean, straightforward bill on disaster relief. We should provide that. They have said they will accept the language of the Senate as long as the Cohen Amendment is not included. And so I don't know, maybe Senator Cohen or Senator Scoy or some other member of the majority might indicate if this bill, this amendment that Senator Cohen put on in Finance Committee, is that attached to any other bill or any? Is it going on its own throughout the process? Is it somewhere else in the process, or is this the only place that this provision exists?
Senator Hahn, is that addressed to someone in particular that you want to yield?
Madam President, and I don't know who to address that to because I don't know what all members have as far as bills, but I think the argument is apparently being made by the majority that we have to do this because it needs to get done. And my question is, if it's in process in some other bill, then it doesn't need to be here. But the bigger point is it's very clear that the other body will not accept and will have to go to conference to deal with the Cohen Amendment. But they are certainly willing to take the changes that the Senate has made in the provisions in the disaster relief itself.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Hahn, we have heard a bill in the Tax Committee that pertains to parts of this. Parts of this are Finance Committee jurisdiction. Parts of it are Tax Committee jurisdiction. But there's no guarantee that any tax bill is going to become signed into law this year. We think that it's very important as we manage the MMB manages the reserve that they get this information sooner. And so I would urge you to not support this amendment and pass the bill.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of the Westrom Amendment. Would Senator Cohen yield for a question, please?
Senator Cohen, will you yield? Senator Cohen. He will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam President. I'm not sure how the reaction was because I don't have my mirror on here, so I couldn't see, but apparently there was some hesitation. Senator Cohen, thank you for taking the time. I do happen to remember the discussion going on very quickly. In fact, I think we had to do a fair amount of talking, which the Senate certainly has no problem doing in the committee in order for us to get this amendment put on this particular bill. So I'm wondering, and I do remember the comment, or at least the feeling that Senator Fischbach was left with, that if this was going to be a real disruptive situation, that you'd be more than willing to look at taking it off. Is that a fair assessment of what you said yesterday in the meeting?
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, at this point in the session, of course, it's difficult for me to remember one day from the next. But as best I know, that's not an accurate paraphrase. I said that I thought that this would, I believe what I said was that I thought that this would be something that would not be of difficulty in dealing with, that I didn't see why this would hold up the bill. And to be honest, as I hear this debate, I have no idea why this would cause a problem. Senator Scoy has explained this quite accurately, that this was a requested change from MMB. It's not something of controversy. It's something that would be of help to the legislature, to MMB, to the fiscal management of the state. and why we can't proceed with this in a very simple way, other than kind of stamping our feet on the ground and saying no, it would seem to me to make perfect sense that we pass the bill and get everything underway.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. If he would yield for at least one more question.
He will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
So Senator Cohen, this is not your average standard finance bill that's coming before you. This is an emergency bill. Now, I know maybe in the metro area we're not that concerned about what goes on in greater Minnesota, but as has been said earlier here today, we are the turkey-producing capital of the United States. And we are in a real disaster right now. This has to be dealt with. I mean, this is not even assess the tornado and do some appropriation a week from now. This has got to be done today. These people need to be on the ground running today. So, Senator Cohen, my question is, could this amendment serve the same purpose that you and Senator Scoy are trying to do by adding it to, say, Senator Tomasoni's committee, or excuse me, a bill in your committee that we're going to be going to after we're done with session, or another finance bill coming before the Finance Committee? We're not even halfway through our bills, I don't believe. So could it be utilized the same purpose in those bills as well as here and doing away with the idea that we're going to stop this funding with the bureaucratic steps that we have to go through a conference committee?
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, you know, keep in mind, and we've discussed this in the Finance Committee, that at least within the Finance Committee, we're trying to stay away from the combination of policy in the finance bills. This is easier said than done because of the complexity and size of these bills. But that is an institutional difference between the House and the Senate relative to the omnibus finance bills. And so where this amendment was presented to Senator Bach, Senator Scoy, and myself, or this requested language was presented to the three of us, we agreed that this was not something we wanted if we could avoid it in a finance bill. And as a consequence, we were looking for something that we thought was appropriate and something that was in the Finance Committee. Because this has some importance to MMB, obviously I don't in any way suggest that the bulk of the bill, the avian flu part of it, is not extremely important. But we thought this would be the path of least resistance.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
So, Madam President, I'll just finish with these comments. So, apparently, if it wouldn't have been for the avian flu disaster coming through here just recently within this last few days, we wouldn't have put this on any bill, according to Senator Cohen. So, it wouldn't have been important enough to put on any bill. So, frankly, we're not dealing with the disaster in a timely fashion here. This is, as Senator Dames called it, I think, a gimmick a little bit earlier. It doesn't have to be considered a gimmick because we can put it on another finance bill. This is not dealing with it in a proper fashion, and it's really unfortunate that the producers out there have to look at us even talking about something like this when we can't even get it together to get this passed. And I think everybody in this body, they don't have to stand up and say that they're for this disaster money. That's not the question. It's this other portion of the bill that all of a sudden this has the emergency with it as well.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, you didn't listen to Senator Scoy very carefully. What Senator Scoy said is that, because keep in mind, what we've done for the last number of years is generally, there have been a couple of exceptions, but generally if there's been reserve statutory language, it's been carried in the tax bill. And it's always been, not a tension, but kind of a back and forth between tax and finance. But over the last number of years, the reserve issue has been carried in the tax bill. For instance, if members recall what we did last year, where we provided language, and this is language Senator Scoy and I worked on last year, but this was language ultimately of Senator Scoy's that was put into the tax bill that allowed for this automatic transfer of surpluses to an appropriate amount to the budget reserve. What Senator Scoy said just a minute ago is that his concern is that we don't have a guarantee that there'll be a tax bill this year. So Senator Ingebrigtsen, in terms of what would be the appropriate vehicle, if we could be guaranteed a tax bill would pass and be signed Sure, maybe we'd wait till that point, but we don't have that guarantee. Senator Scoy explained that just a few minutes ago.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Cohen, I was a little concerned about your characterization of our objections and the Western Amendment as stamping our feet on the ground and saying no. It's hard for me to look at the policy that you have in your Finance Committee to say that you're not going to allow any provision in the bill that doesn't meet a test that you have that may not be clear to the rest of us about provisions in finance bills. That may be stamping your feet on the ground in Finance Committee and saying no to something that may make sense to the rest of us. But here's the point. This is a disaster relief bill. I don't believe we have ever, in any disaster relief bill that we've passed, put extraneous provisions in them and said, let's pass that as well because it's expedient to do so. This provision that you're talking about has nothing to do with avian flu. It's very clear that this will slow up the process, and I just want members of this body to know that failure to support the Western Amendment will delay the disaster relief to the farmers of this state. So vote for the Western Amendment. I hope you do. But if you don't, you're voting to slow down the relief and slow down the process because I guess you want to have this in this bill for whatever reason I don't get.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Dahl yield?
Senator Dahl will yield. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Dahl, did you receive any contact in regard to MMB as far as needing to put this amendment on your bill?
Senator Dahl.
Madam President, Senator Peterson, I did receive some contact from MMB about the other section. On this particular section one, I did not receive specific instruction.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. That would explain why we have no letter on our desk from the budget, from management and budget. We all know in this chamber when an state agency needs to do something, when the governor needs to do something, we get a letter from them to the entire body letting us know that this is not a problem. If for no other reason, members, you should be putting this on any other six or eight bills that are on the floor based on the argument Senator Collins is making. It does not belong on this bill. The author of the bill didn't even know about it. And then you come to this chamber and make the argument that there was some kind of meeting that involved three members of the chamber without bothering to inform anybody else. If nothing else, you should vote for Senator Westrom's amendment just to send a message to MMB. They got to communicate better with the entire body. Members, you have a chance to fix this and do it the way it's intent. Support Senator Westrom's amendment and then pass this bill.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam President, members, just a little bit of recent history about kind of must-pass bills. One of the earliest bills we passed in this session was the deficiency bill that took care of a number of funding deficiencies in this biennium, the biggest, largest of which was Senator Sharon's district down at the St. Peter Hospital. This Senate, with a unanimous vote, put a provision on that bill that froze commissioner's salaries until June 30th. It's not as though there isn't some precedent to amend bills that we think are on a must-pass track, and ultimately that ended up enacted into law. A little bumpy it was, but it ended up enacted into law in adequate time, and I believe this one will also.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, I'm taking a look at this, and for the advantage of the folks that might be watching this debate and wondering what this is about, I thought I would just take a moment to take a look at what Section 1 does that is of such critical, crucial importance, Madam President, that we have to attach it to an avian flu bill. So the language here is to change the date from January 15th to August 31st of each year. And what is this crucial, urgent emergency for, Madam President? It is for a report. A report that would also, in this critically important section, change it from the ranking chairs and ranking minority members instead to the Senate Finance Committee, the House of Representatives Ways and Means Committee, and the Senate and House of Representatives Committees on Taxes. This is something so urgent and absolutely so important, Madam President, that we would attach it to this bill and take this kind of risk. I also took a look at this bill, and they're claiming here that this is some sort of a fiscal or a finance bill requirement. Well, I see no fiscal note for this report. It's policy. It's already in process, so there is no extra cost to change the date. So I question that this even has bearing on a finance bill basis. And so it is policy. It's not fiscal. It is not an emergency. My goodness sakes, a report alongside avian flu. Madam President, support, Madam President and members, support the Westrom Amendment. Let's get on with it and take off a simple report that is not necessary with this emergency bill. Please vote green on the Westrom Amendment.
Is there anyone else who wants to speak before I give Senator Westrom the final word? Then Senator Westrom for final comments.
Well, Madam President, if Senator Skoy would yield for a question.
Senator Skoy will yield. Senator Westrom.
Senator Skoy, you talked about this report that has to be on this bill because you may not have any tax bill coming out of your committee. Are you telling us here today that you don't think any tax bills will make it out of your committee to the Senate floor that will be able to be debated and passed through? Not any. I'm not talking a large tax increase, just even some local or smaller tax bills that clean up language. Are you telling us that, if you would yield?
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Westrom. Well, as you know, the Constitution requires that bills that pertain to raising taxes originate in the House, so we'll see what they send over. The issue that I'm talking about here isn't that whether we're going to have a tax bill that we can move out of the Senate Tax Committee to the floor. The issue is whether it becomes signed into law. And the House sends over bills all the time. We amend them. They sent over, as Senator Bach said, a deficiency bill. We amended it. I don't think that this should be such an issue that we're debating it at length like this on the Senate floor. The House should be able to accept the fixes that we put in this bill as good common sense fixes. The Senate's one of the bodies of the legislature, and they should respect our ideas. And, you know, the finance bills, in order to keep state government going, they need to become law. We don't need a tax bill this year. We have no way of knowing at this point how negotiations are going to go with the House. We don't know what the governor's position is going to be. This would be an opportunity to get this accomplished, and I would urge you to not support the Westrom Amendment and then pass Senator Dahl's bill.
Senator Westrom for wrap-up.
Madam President, Senator Skoy, you just talked about it's not whether we get it off the Senate floor, it's about getting a bill signed. Well, we've got that exact problem in front of us right now. We need to send a clean bill out of here so it gets signed and it doesn't get bogged down in conference committee or other reasons to not have this pass fast for our turkey farmers and the turkey industry in the state of Minnesota. Senator Skoy, the report that you and others in the Democrat Party are pleading your case of why we have to stop or slow down this emergency relief for avian flu virus, the report that you're trying to slow this down over has been one on the books for years. And so, members, it's only common sense to take this language off so it doesn't slow down the emergency response to the avian flu virus that Senator Dahl rightfully has brought forward. This report was not a new report in last year's legislation that somehow doesn't work. We've received multiple reports already from the agencies. We just passed off the floor yesterday a state government omnibus bill. This little provision easily could have fell into that bill or gotten put in that bill. But somehow the DFL is not able to lead with the control of other bills coming through here. It is baffling. The public ought to know and ought to ask questions. Why does the DFL want to slow down this emergency response with this unrelated provision? Senator Cohen, you just talked and responded to Senator Ingebrigtsen about, well, this seemed to make the most sense. Senator Cohen, I know you have much more capability and artfulness to find a place for this benign legislation, as you and others have referred to it as. Senator Nenow, I think, even talked about that. I know you are artful enough, and you've been around here long enough, that you don't have to put it on an emergency bill passing through when you've got all the omnibus finance bills coming through, multiple other bills with policy and finance in them that you are the chair of. You and the tax chair are the most two powerful chairmen and committees in this Senate body. And yet, somehow it's got to be on this bill. And so, members, I raised this issue yesterday in Finance Committee. As I said, it was slipped in the last couple of minutes. And I said, what is this for? Because it's not related that I can tell. I don't know if this provision is critical, if there's something we should be suspicious of. It looks pretty benign on its face. But members, it's kind of like anytime you're doing some investigation and all of a sudden, if those you're asking questions to don't want to answer questions or somehow want to get stubborn and put their feet in cement, you keep digging because there's apparently more to this than what we're being showed or told. And so in less than 36 hours, we've got a bill. It's already been held up a day because of this provision. It's going to be held up longer because it's going to have to go to conference committee rather than the House agreeing to the correct technical corrections or the corrections that we passed in finance committee. But what is there to hide? Why is there this stiff opposition by the DFL such that they'll hold up this emergency funding over this little provision? It makes you even more suspicious, and you have to ask more questions about what is the urgency or need or reason behind moving this reporting date from January 15th to August 31st, such that it has to be in this emergency bill, hijack this bill, because you have no other bills to do. Now, Senator Cohen, I've got more faith in you than that. I don't believe that's a legitimate reason, but I'm not going to question your motives here. Senator Cohen, I do want to also remind you and let the body know what I heard coming out of committee. Senator Fischbach talked about it here earlier. Senator Ingebrigtsen talked about it. And you recited half of what you said, although you said your memory wasn't that good. The first half of what you recited was pretty close to what I heard in committee, that you thought it wouldn't slow it down, but you also concluded that statement and said, but if it would slow things down, I would take it off. Senator Cohen, you didn't tell us that when you just spoke a little while ago. I would suggest our staff could go get the committee tape if we need. But Senator Cohen, that is what I recall you saying as we questioned this amendment and this language that was slipped in at the last minute of the Finance Committee. I would urge you to just do what you said to us as it left Finance Committee, that if it became a problem or a delay, take it off, put it on another bill. You will find Republicans probably locking arm in arm with you if this language is as benign as it's being portrayed to be. There's many more bills to put it on. Don't slow down the emergency response to the avian flu virus for our turkey farmers in my district and across the state of Minnesota. Members, support this amendment.
Senator Nenow, and then we should vote.
Thank you, Madam President, and I apologize to Senator Westrum for stepping on his final comments, but I realize there's one more last very important item that we haven't yet addressed. Madam President, you have been around long enough to see very important issues like this be turned into a political hot potato. I know you have. I have. Many of the members in this chamber have been around long enough to see extremely important issues get bogged down with extraneous items tagged onto them and turned into a political hot potato. We send this over to the House. It's got something totally irrelevant. They take the funding provision into something else that's totally irrelevant. They don't want to take our language. We don't want to take their language. Pretty soon, sine die, and it never gets done. The language that was added in the Finance Committee does not make the bill easier to pass. We've seen the memo from the House. They won't take provisions that don't relate to the disaster at hand. The language that Senator Westrom is trying to remove makes it harder to pass. We all know that. Madam President, will Senator Dahl yield?
Senator Dahl will yield. Senator Nino.
Senator Dahl, given that the language Senator Westrom is trying to remove, if it's in your bill, is going to make your bill a little more difficult to pass, and if it is removed, if Senator Westrom's amendment is successful, your bill will be clean and it will be easier to pass. Do you support the Westrom Amendment or do you oppose the Westrom Amendment?
Senator Dahl.
Madam President and Senator Nienau, I'm going to support, I'm going to oppose the amendment. I've listened to the Senator Skoy and Senator Cohen's and everybody, actually, Senator Kiffmeyer and Senator Nienau, in terms that I do believe it is a benign amendment, or in terms of the language in Section 1. So I do hope that this isn't, it already is a political hot potato, but members, you can vote as you wish. I'm going to be opposing the amendment. Thanks.
Secretary will take the roll on the A50 amendment. Senate is under call. All members having voted that desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. There being 27 ayes and 38 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? The Secretary will give House File 2225 its third reading.
House File Number 2225, a bill for an act relating to agriculture, appropriating money for avian influenza emergency response activities.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, Secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes, and zero nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 8 on general orders, Senate File 495, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to present to the body Senate File 495, which is the Stroke Transfer Protocol Bill. Just by history and to give some context to this bill, I would remind the body that we have passed in the past two legislative sessions a couple of bills related to improving the capacity of our hospitals and our ambulance services to be responsive to stroke. We know, of course, that time is of the essence when responding to stroke victims. The sooner we are able to implement scientifically based interventions, the better outcomes people have. And we can really improve the general outcome and the lifelong expectancy and quality of life of persons who experience stroke. So we've passed a couple of pieces of legislation that developed a system whereby hospitals can establish and meet standards to be stroke ready. This proposal was to make certain that hospitals throughout the state knew what was required of them in order for them to be able to be responsive to stroke victims who brought to them in emergency conditions. Last session, the legislature added that the hospital, in order to receive a comprehensive or a primary stroke center designation, had to participate in something called the Minnesota Stroke Registry Program. And this was designed for the Department of Health to gather information about what was happening out there in relationship to stroke, how quickly they were able to transport, how close those ambulances were when strokes occurred to hospitals that had received the appropriate designations. And they were able to utilize that information to support and implement other kind of quality improvement measures in response to stroke. What this bill does is the next step, which is to require all emergency medical service programs to develop stroke support transport plans. And these protocols that are to be developed have to include triage standards of care and specific time frames for transporting acutely ill stroke patients. This is a pre-hospital initiative. The other two were related to hospitals themselves. So this is something that many EMS services have already implemented. But by initiating this legislation, all ambulance service, all emergency medical service programs will implement these protocols, including an understanding of what the various hospitals in the area are in terms of meeting the standards and protocols for being a comprehensive stroke center. So I'm hoping that you will give your full support to this bill that's moved through committees without objection.
Is there any discussion? Any amendments? Secretary will give Senate File 495 its third reading.
Senate File Number 495, a bill for an act relating to health, requiring stroke transport protocols.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted. All members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 22 on general order, Senate File 997.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Jensen.
Senate File 997. What this does is it amends our statute in regards to minimum inflation protection for long-term care partnership policies from the 3% that is currently in statute to 1%. Allowing for flexibility in this level of inflation protection, I think this is one of the most immediate ways that we can offer more affordable and significant long-term care insurance coverage for middle-income individuals. The Long-Term Care Partnership Program was designed to encourage consumers to buy private long-term care insurance. It's federally supported, state-operated. It allows individuals who purchase a qualified long-term care policy to protect their assets through a buy-down policy that you normally would have to do to qualify for medical assistance. Those who purchase a partnership-qualified plan can earn $1 of asset for every dollar of insurance coverage paid on their behalf.
Sir Jensen, I thought you were pausing because it was getting noisy.
I was. Thank you, Madam President.
Yes. People could please take your conversations off the floor, and staff members, please do not talk to each other on the floor. Thank you. Senator Jensen.
Research has shown that middle-income consumers are being priced out of the long-term care market. Yet, if we could lower that price, it has been shown statistically and through research that we would get more people involved in this type of policy and protect more assets and have people on medical assistance at a later delayed date. We're not adequately prepared for the rising cost of long-term care, nor are we as taxpayers ready to support the public cost of long-term care. With our aging demographics, along with the availability of family caregivers, this is a threat to our reliance on medical assistance. We've been considered a leader in this area, and I think with this new policy, we can continue to be thinking about our consumers, with the challenges that they face in their future. The Department of Commerce supports this. This was part of our Own Your Future Advisory Panel. They're all supportive, and I hope to gain your support on this as well. There is one other section in the bill that I want to bring to your attention, that certain pre-July 1st, 2006 policies would be also qualified for partnership policies, and I would stand for questions.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I rise to support the bill. I know a few of us worked on the original bill back in 2006, Senator Nelson and maybe others, but I just have one clarifying question for Senator Jensen, if she would yield.
She will yield. Senator Gazelka.
When the second section about qualifying pre-2006 policies, I just want to clarify that when we talk about it, as long as they haven't had benefits paid out that they're eligible, I'm assuming that that does not include if a company waives somebody's premium. That's not considered a benefit for this. Is that correct?
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Gazelka, that's correct. That's the intention of this legislation.
All right, thank you. Yeah, this is a very,
Senator
very
Gazelka.
Good bill. Thank you, Madam President.
Is there any other discussion? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of Senate File 997. This is something that certainly, while it was well-intended that there be a 3% inflationary factor on long-term care policies in order for them to be eligible to participate in the Minnesota Partnership, it has unintended consequences. And that is, of course, the higher the inflationary factor protection, the higher the cost it is for consumers to purchase these policies. And while this was well-intended, what it has done, having such a high inflationary factor requirement, has really, really closed the market for numbers of consumers. And so we were disincenting consumers to purchase the long-term care insurance that is so important in our aging society. So reducing this inflationary factor will make these policies more affordable, will encourage more people to plan for their futures, through long-term care insurance. So I would rise in support of this. It is good for Minnesotans. And let me just add some numbers to what Senator Jensen was saying in preparing for the long-term care needs in our society. I think you might have heard this before, but as baby boomers, we are aging, of course, and it's a tsunami that we're headed into. Longevities are increasing. Medical techniques are also extending life, and we have 10,000 baby boomers turning 65 each and every day for the next 19 years. This is a long-term problem. We need more people to invest in their long-term care, and this bill will help do that.
Is there any more discussion? The Secretary will give Senate File 997 its third reading.
Senate File Number 997, a bill for an act relating to insurance, long-term care, reducing the minimum permitted inflation protection for a long-term care insurance partnership policy.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, Secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 120 on general orders, Senate File 1455, Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam President. Today, as I said, presenting Senate File 1455. This bill repeals a Minnesota statute that authorizes a district court to appoint the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs as guardian of the estate of a veteran or dependent when the court finds appointment of a guardian to be necessary. This bill has the support of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and there's no known opposition. This started as an unfunded program in 1976, and in 2002, federal policy changed and the program was no longer necessary. The last time the program was utilized was in 2006, and the Department of Veterans Affairs stopped this service in 2007. Members, I request your support and stand for questions.
Is there any discussion? Secretary will give Senate File 1455 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1455, a bill for an act relating to veterans, repealing Commissioner of Veteran Affairs Guardianship Program.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, Secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 81 on general orders, Senate File 1535, Senator Bonoff. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I have the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Bonoff moves to amend Senate file number 1535 as follows. Page 1, delete section 1. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. The A50 amendment deletes section 1 because it refers to the e-verify language that we passed in the higher ed bill yesterday, so it was no longer necessary to put it in this bill. Members, the bill before you is the Office of Higher Ed's agency bill. It is primarily technical in nature. Last year, we all had our unsessioned bills, and there were certain things that the Office of Higher Ed had requested to be in the unsessioned bill that we did not include, that we had some time over the interim to revisit and are now putting this forward.
Senator Bonoff, would you like us to vote on the amendment before you describe your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam President.
Is there any discussion on the A50 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you very much, Madam President. So, as I said, Article 1 is primarily technical changes to update terminology, delete obsolete language, or put statutes in plain language. Article 2 removes language regarding the Achieve Scholarship Program, which has not been funded since 2011. Article 3 prohibits schools from withholding transcripts if a student is delinquent in paying a loan from that institution.
Is there any discussion? Any questions? Any amendments? The Secretary will give Senate File 1535 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1535, a bill for an act relating to higher education, making various technical and policy changes.
Any more discussion? Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1535. All members having voted. Secretary will close the roll. There have been 65 ayes and 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. I was told that Senator Latz wanted his bill moved to the end. Is that true? All right. Then the next bill under on special orders is number 124 on general orders, Senate File 1406. Senator Herr.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1406 is a 2015 omnibus land bill. This bill contains provision of 15 authors on sales of state parcel and transfer of tax-forfeited lands. This year, bills include lands parcel in 15 counties with no opposition from neighboring landowners or any other entity. The DNR came to testify in the committee with full support of all the 25 sections in this bill as we the legislator listened to them. I'd like to thank members of the Environmental and Energy Committee, especially my colleague in the Land Subcommittee, Senator Scuzzi, Senator Weber, and Senator Lyle-Conan for spending late hours for listening to all the testimonies. Senator, this bill is non-controversial, and I ask for your green vote and open for any discussion.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A4 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Gazelka moves to amend Senate File Number 1406 as follows. page 5, delete section 6, and this is the A4 amendment.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is clarifying language to an amend or to language that's already in the bill. Had Minnesota Revenue and Department of DNR help me with the clarifying language. I have talked to the author, and I believe he considers it a friendly amendment.
Any discussion on the A4 amendment? Senator Herr.
Madam President, I accept this amendment as friendly amendment. I have received approval from the DNR and member of my subcommittee as well, chair of the Environmental Committee, do support this amendment as well.
Any more discussion on the A4 amendment? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. I offer the A2 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Jensen moves to amend Senate file number 1406 as follows. Page 15 after line 23, insert. And this is the A2 amendment.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. This is something that was brought to me just recently. There was a tax forfeiture piece of land in my district that was turned over to the county, and the county would like to convey it to the city. It lays right next to the Teepee Tonka Park in Faribault, and I have talked to Senator Herr, and I hope that this would be considered a friendly amendment as well.
Is there any discussion on the A2 amendment? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Senator Herr, I'm sorry. Did you want to say something?
Madam Chair, Madam President, I would accept this as a friendly amendment, yes.
All those in favor say, any more discussion? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay. All right. Senator Herr.
Madam Chair, I thank you for, before we make a motion, I really appreciate, and I want to thank the land subcommittee member as well, my committee members. I want to also make an announcement that this is a vehicle for legislator to submit in their county or state tax forfeited land, and this is a vehicle to do it. So next year, if you have land in your area, please come to me early. Thank you.
Then who does? Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam President, and I just wanted to thank Senator Herr for thanking everybody. He does such a good job at making sure that these bills are thorough, and we just want to make sure that we thank him.
Secretary will give Senate File 1406 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1406, the bill for an act relating to state lands, providing for public and private sales and conveyance of certain state land.
Secretary will take the roll.
What's this red light stuff? Hanging around?
All members having voted. Sam. All members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. We will now take up Senator Latz's bill number 63 on general orders, Senate file 1073. Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, this is the omnibus DWI bill. It comes to you as
a package that has been prepared through a combination of bills introduced on behalf of the Minnesota DWI Task Force, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the Minnesota Association for Criminal Defense Lawyers, and other parties that had input in this. Most of the provisions in here are both supported by Mothers Against Drunk Driving and the DWI Task Force specifically as introduced as part of their packages. It has two main themes. One is to align the alcohol concentration threshold for enhancement purposes with the science that shows the point at which the likelihood, statistical likelihood of a crash increases. And that's to move the 0.20 threshold down to a 0.16 alcohol concentration for purposes of a first-time offense being a gross misdemeanor. And the second main theme is to incentivize people who are in the position of having their licenses revoked because of a DWI to enroll and participate in the Ignition Interlock program. The Ignition Interlock program is an important safety device that can be installed in vehicles, and a driver would have to blow in the device to make sure that they are sober, have no alcohol in their system before the vehicle will start, and then has rolling retests as well, has a camera in it to make sure that the person who's blowing into it is in fact the person who's supposed to be doing so. And it's been demonstrated around the country and in Minnesota that it's very, very good at preventing incidents of DWI. So to the specifics, members, I've already mentioned the reduction of the 0.20 threshold down to 0.16. This will make it easier administratively for the Department of Public Safety and for the public to understand, because right now 0.16 is the administrative threshold for license revocations and plate impoundments and vehicle forfeitures, but it's not the threshold for the criminal charge to be enhanced. The studies show that actually it's a 0.15 at which the likelihood of a crash increases, but 0.16 is easily understood because it's exactly double the current legal threshold for a regular misdemeanor DWI, which is a 0.08. So 0.16 would be the new threshold. And that would also then be important for purposes of when the ignition interlock device is required for early driver's license reinstatement. There is a number of provisions in here that align the defenses available in the criminal proceedings with the defenses that are available in the civil driver's license proceedings under the implied consent law. The implied consent revocation is an administrative notation revoking the driver's license that gets entered on the driver's record and has the same impact as a criminal conviction for purposes of enhancing future alcohol-related driving incidents, and in most of the cases also for making insurance premiums go up 300% to 400%. So it's a very important component to the legal consequences of facing a DWI arrest. That is the basis for making sure that the defenses that are available in the DWI criminal proceedings are the same as in the implied consent and vice versa. These defenses will include the necessity defense, which is in response specifically to a Minnesota Supreme Court case in which a woman was forced to drive to escape a physical attack by her husband. They were both drunk at the time. For her own safety, she was able to escape and could assert the defense in the criminal case, but she was not allowed under the statute to assert the defense in the driver's license case. The Supreme Court basically said the legislature has to fix this problem. They have to read the statute as it's written. So this fixes that problem in the statute. Other defenses that will now be available in both proceedings are the prescription drug defense. If someone's taking medications in accordance with, in compliance with, their prescription, then they would have a defense to the charges and to the implied consent revocation. Post-driving consumption as an affirmative defense, it'd be the driver's burden to prove that the alcohol they consumed occurred after they were driving. But if they can prove that, then in fact they were not driving in violation of the law and should be entitled to have that defense. And also a reasonable refusal defense, the grounds there, it's available in the implied consent, not on the criminal side right now. But if they can demonstrate what is a very narrow legal defense, that their refusal to submit to testing had reasonable grounds, then they'd have the availability of that defense in the criminal case. And in all of these defenses, there's an additional provision that they would have to provide adequate notice to the prosecuting authority so that the prosecutor will be aware of the intent of the driver to assert these defenses. There's a provision in the bill that requires law enforcement to disclose the results of the preliminary screening test after an arrest is concluded, so that the driver will have that information available to him or her if they request it. There's a provision in the bill that allows or requires the return of a vehicle that is proposed for forfeiture if the driver agrees within 60 days to install the ignition interlock device into the vehicle to drive only that vehicle, and that if they violate the terms of that return of the vehicle, then they automatically forfeit that vehicle without any recourse. So that's part of the theme that is designed to encourage people to drive lawfully, with a valid license, with insurance, and with the ignition interlock safety device in their vehicle. The law enforcement and the community that follows these things all understand that often, too often, persons whose licenses are revoked opt not to go into the ignition interlock program and drive without a valid license, often without insurance, without the safety ignition interlock device in their vehicle, at a risk to lots of people, and take the chance that they won't get caught. So the more people we can get into the ignition interlock program, the safer all of us on the roads will be. There are four provisions in here that are specifically identified out of the Mothers Against Drunk Driving bill that they had introduced. One exempts DWI offenders from having to take the written examination as a condition of driver's license reinstatement. Given the current process now, that written examination is essentially redundant. There's a provision that allows those who have repeat DWI offenses to immediately get their full driving privileges back with the ignition interlock device, rather than having limited driving privileges for the first year of that ignition interlock program. And a provision which allows individuals who do not have a history of insurance violations to get reinstated and participate in the ignition interlock program without providing proof of 1 year of non-cancelable insurance paid for in advance. The theory here was persons that don't have a history of insurance violations shouldn't have to make that additional upfront expenditure. Those who do have a history of insurance violations will have to prove they have insurance paid in advance for a full year. There's another provision in the ignition interlock program here from the Mothers Against Drunk Driving, which I'm going to move to amend to delete out of the bill after I'm done explaining it, so I'll address that provision shortly. Also, members taken from the DWI Task Force bill is a provision to allow law enforcement to use a permanent sticker to enforce the plate impoundment law rather than physically removing and destroying the plates. This will save money and will be far more convenient for law enforcement. It increases the validity periods of temporary permits under the plate impoundment law from 7 to 14 days so that persons have an opportunity to comply and enroll in the ignition interlock program and get regular license plates back rather than the special series, or sometimes called whiskey plates. That's also another provision in this bill. Again, an incentive to enroll in the ignition interlock program. It makes criminal violations of the ignition interlock law non-payable offenses. They won't simply be able to write a check and not appear in court. They will have to appear in court and answer directly for those offenses. That strengthens the ignition interlock enforcement. Members, it also makes it a misdemeanor crime to remove that permanent sticker that's affixed to a plate to impound it. And it also requires those who intend or seek to participate in the ignition interlock program under the indigent standards so they get reduced fees for participation in the program, to submit a sworn statement regarding their indigency, and it creates the crime of a misdemeanor of making a false statement as a part of that. So this is aimed at reducing any abuses that may be occurring from those who don't actually fall within the indigency standards for the Ignition Interlock program. So members, I will address the amendment that I'm going to offer as well. There is a provision in the bill which the committee and which Mothers Against Drunk Driving specifically strongly believes is in the interest of public safety. And it has to do with allowing those who have killed someone when they drive drunk to participate in the Ignition Interlock program. And the theory and strong belief, and I share this as well, is that of all the people who you want to be driving with the Ignition Interlock device in their vehicle, with that safety device there, with a valid license, with insurance, it's those who have committed the most egregious harm by driving while intoxicated. Those who have killed someone while doing so. But I will tell you quite candidly, this provision, or a provision similar to it, that is currently law, became a political football in the last election cycle. And I think it's really bad for public policy that that happened, but I don't want there to be that controversy surrounding this bill. So I'm reluctantly going to offer the A6 amendment to delete that provision from the bill, even though the committee specifically wanted to include it in here so that we could make the statement as a matter of public policy. It's good, safe public policy. But I want to remove this political issue from the bill, and so I offer the A6 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Latz moves to amend Senate file number 1073 as follows. Page 9, delete section 13, and this is the A6 amendment.
Is there any discussion on the A6 amendment? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Latz. I just want to speak to this idea of removing this provision and express my regret or opposition in doing so. I understand Senator Latz's rationale, and frankly, I think it's a shame. I understand the nature of this place and such that if we're going to make public policy the right way, inevitably we're going to have to do things that require us to face the political backlash, and that's just a part of responsible public policy making. Senator Latz, I commend you for putting it in the bill, and I agree with all of the rationale that you have laid out, and I won't reiterate that. But I think it's an indictment on us that we can't make these sorts of policy decisions and that we succumb to these sorts of pressures when we're talking about, frankly, at times, matters of life and death, and certainly things that impact real people's lives. And I just wanted to say that for the record. Thank you, Madam President.
Is there any more discussion on the A6 amendment? Senator Latz, did you have more? Any more discussion? Then all those in favor of the A6 amendment say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Any other discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate. There is. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I rise in support of the DWI omnibus bill. This is a bill that, in my estimation, was thoroughly vetted in the Judiciary Committee. We spent a great deal of time discussing the various provisions of it. And I will tell you that we didn't take all, but we took many of the DWI task force recommendations. I do want to point out four different provisions in it that in particular I am in agreement with and in supporting this bill. The first one is there's a provision in the bill that provides an individual would have 60 rather than 30 days in order to request a hearing from the court when a license revocation occurs. And specifically, What has happened in the past is folks would get notice of their license revocation after the 30-day period had already expired. And consequently, that seems to me to be no due process at all to be notified after the time period when you have a right to request the hearing. So we've now expanded that, and we are going to allow people a period of 60 days in order to request that hearing should they want to do so. There is this list of affirmative defenses on page 24. And remember, affirmative defenses are defenses that are the obligation of the defendant to prove, not the state. The one that is really pretty interesting is the necessity defense, and there was frankly compelling testimony in committee as to why we should allow this defense of necessity in DWI charges, and it did involve, as Senator Latz has indicated, a Minnesota Supreme Court case where a lady literally took refuge in her automobile because her estranged husband was very, very insistent on beating her up. And he followed her out to the car, and she got in the car. She hid in the car. He was banging on the windshield. He broke the windshield trying to get at her. She had literally no place to go except start the car and drive away, even though she had been drinking. The necessity defense, folks, is one that is going to be used very, very rarely. And I did ask in committee for a definition of necessity, and one of the testifiers, I don't remember who it was, did run through a list of criteria that has to be available before a defense of necessity could be proven, and it is a jury question. So it isn't as though everybody is going to be able to bring this defense up. It's going to be something that's going to be rare, but when it's needed, would certainly be appropriate, as in the case of the Minnesota Supreme Court case. The disclosure of the preliminary screening test, I frankly was surprised. That if you are stopped and they do the preliminary screening test out on the highway, the cops don't have to give it to you. But the police use that for the determination of probable cause to continue with the arrest procedure. And so to me, it's absolutely appropriate to require the police to disclose this to folks, and I cannot think of a single reason why they shouldn't have to. So that is now in the bill. The final thing I wanted to mention to you is this ignition interlock program. We did have quite a bit of testimony on it, and it just seems to me to be a really a good idea to utilize the interlock program. Number one, it's voluntary. If you don't want to take advantage of it, you don't have to. Number two, you have to pay for it yourself unless you can prove that you are indigent. So it doesn't cost us any money. You have to realize the people who drink and drive, in all likelihood, if you take their license away from them, they're going to drive anyhow, especially if they have to drive in order to get to work. So then go to the study, and there's a study out there that says that about 67% reduction in reoffenses occur if the interlock program is utilized. So this is really an incentive to people to not drink and drive. And it's a program that I think the pilot programs have shown that it is in fact working. And I think Minnesota should continue moving along the lines of utilizing this particular program, because it's one of the few things that I can think of that really in fact works in terms of getting people who are drunk off the road. And for those reasons, I support the interlock program, and for those reasons, Madam President, I support the DWI omnibus bill and encourage folks to vote for it. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Gazaka.
Thank you, Madam President. One brief question. Will Senator Latz yield?
Senator Latz will yield. Senator Gazaka.
I just want to confirm, Senator Latz, the cost for the ignition interlock of $75 to $135 a month, I'm assuming that the offender is the one that pays that.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Gazaka, that's correct. Thank you,
Senator Gazelka.
And Madam Chair and members, even at the 0.16 for perspective on a first-time offender that has to use that, that's 8 drinks in 1 hour for the average male, 6 drinks for the average female. And so it's not asking too much that they immediately have to use that interlock system. I think 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, the number of fatalities from alcohol on the roads in Minnesota was about 50%. When we lowered it from 0.1 down to 0.08, those numbers dropped to about a third, from 50% down to one-third. It would not surprise me with the use of this ignition interlock if it drops even more, maybe even 0.25.
Is there any more discussion on Senate File 1073? The Secretary will give Senate File 1073 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1073, a bill for an act relating to driving while impaired, addressing the applicability of certain affirmative defenses in DWI and CVO-related proceedings.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 1 nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The last bill on special orders is number 38 on general orders, Senate File 100, Senator Peterson B.
Thank you, Madam President. First, I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Peterson B. moves to amend Senate File Number 100 as follows, page 2, after line 36, and this is the A7 amendment.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, the amendment that you see before you is an amendment that has been worked out with the Department of Health. You can read the plain language there. Basically, members, the bill, as it was originally written, did not require anybody to cover the costs of accessing investigational drugs. And the Department of Health wanted some comfort language that just clarified that they also did not or were not required to cover incidental costs associated with access to the investigational drugs like transportation or other accommodations. It was my opinion, frankly, that the language wasn't necessary, however, in order to work out and get to a place of agreement with the department. I'm offering the A7 amendment.
Is there any discussion on the A7 amendment? All those in favor of the A7 amendment say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. On the bill as amended, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, before you, Senate File 100 also has been referred to as the Right to Try Act. In short, members, what this bill does is allow individuals who are in the desperate situation of having a terminal diagnosis, who have exhausted conventional means of treatment, and have a prescription and have consulted with their physician, have the ability to access drugs that are still in their investigational phase. Many people on the surface ask me questions about, well, what sorts of things are those? And throw out a whole bunch of hypotheticals about foreign drugs or various exotic homeopathic treatments and things of that nature. It's important to point out, members, that this bill does not include those items. As you'll read in the Part C in Section 1, these are drugs that have to be through the first phase of the FDA trial process. Phase 1, Madam President, members, is the phase particularly that deals with the safety and dosage levels of the drug itself. So these are legitimate pharmaceutical trials and have been through some scrutiny at the FDA, but still haven't been through the subsequent phases of the approval process. It's also important to point out that the Right to Try Act, or Senate File 100, does not invent the idea of access to investigational drugs. Members should know that there already is a program through the FDA called the FDA Compassionate Use Exception that allows people to get access to investigational drugs. What we've found, however, Madam President, is that there are very few who actually get through the FDA process. It's a lengthy process, requires hundreds of hours on the physician's part as well as the patient's part in terms of sending paperwork back and forth and verifying and validating processes that are quite lengthy. In the last year, only about 1,000, as I said, only about 1,000 people in the country actually gained access to that program. While we know that there are literally millions of people with terminal diagnosis that potentially, if there were an easier process, could have access to it. Keep in mind, members, that sometimes these individual patients don't have the time or the means to go through hundreds of hours of paperwork and processes. And this bill simply says that in these desperate situations, an individual can consult with a professional physician and make a decision that's in their best interest when they've already exhausted other conventional means. That's an overview of the bill. I'll stand for questions, and I would appreciate the members' support.
Is there any discussion? Secretary will give Senate File 100 its third reading.
Senate File Number 100, a bill for an act relating to health, permitting the use of investigational drugs, biological products, or devices by certain eligible patients.
Seeing no discussion, Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and 4 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Right. Are there any announcements? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. The Senate Transportation Public Safety Finance Division will meet right after session adjourns in room 112.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, this will be for the purpose of marking up the policy bill that we brought back to committee.
Senator Cohen.
And Madam President, I know the transportation meeting, but finance will meet the moment we walk out of this place downstairs and resume our discussion on Senator Tomasoni's bill.
Any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, the intent for the rest of the evening is going to be to recess and then come back with just the skeleton crew to accept the committee report from Senator Cohen on the Thomasoni omnibus bill. So other than just a handful of people, there really doesn't have to be anybody else here to do that.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. And I'm wondering, Senator Bach, could you just maybe share with the rest of the body what you think the plan will be for the rest of the week for floor and just how you see the schedule going forward the next rest couple of days?
Policy. Madam President and Senator Hanna members, the intent is, unless some sand gets into the gears in Senator Cohen's committee, to take up the Thomasoni omnibus bill tomorrow in Environment and Economic Development, to take up on Thursday Judiciary Policy and Judiciary Finance, and to take up on Friday HHS Finance. And at this point, we do not plan on a Saturday session.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, if there are no further announcements, I move a recess of the Senate to the call of the chair.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam President, I move we adopt the report, committee report, read by the Secretary.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Second reading of Senate bills. Senate file 2101 will be given its second reading. Excuses. Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senator Miller all day, Senator Goodwin 220 to 225, Senator Dahl 230 to 240, Senator Schmidt 230 to 240, Senator Rosen 250 until the end of session, Senator Brown 255 until the end of session. Are there any announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the Senate do not adjourn until Wednesday, April 22, 12 o'clock noon.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.